It's nice to see you all. Go ahead and start the tape rolling if you want to. I'm John Brand. This is the last in a series of sessions I entitled Horns and Halos. And the reason for the title is that at times in our lives we are pretty nice people. We have halos over our heads and we're so like miniature angels. And other times we're genuine master devils. We sprout horns. And so what I've tried to do is to bring in a variety of reasons as to why there is this diversity of behavior. I started out the first session by talking a little about the paradigm shifts that are taking place in our society. I can't repeat all of that, but basically what we're experiencing is a shift conceptually from classical physics, which believes in absolutes and that things happen independently of each other. This is classical Newtonian physics, to the type of physics, the type of understanding about the nature of the universe in which there are no absolutes. Quantum is one of the lessons of quantum physics, that in the world of nature, there are no absolutes, that all things are interrelated. And the greatest lesson, according to Boehm, who is one of the theoretical physicists who has written extensively on quantum physics, the one thing that he wants people to remember is the one underlying thesis that the world is an undivided whole of an implicate order, an undivided whole of an implicate nature. And for us to make the change over from a divided world of absolute values into a kind of a cosmology where everything is interrelated with everything else creates some real horns in our heads, because we don't quite know how to relate to this, and this is just a conceptual kind of thing in the background. The other sessions that I led dealt more with a little bit of field of psychology and human behavior, and that's what I wanted today. I want to introduce you to something that's probably you never thought about, and it'd be a lot of fun to do. And in order to get into it, I've got a little questionnaire here. It's called an interest factor questionnaire. And if you don't have a pencil or pen, remember the answers that you give. As I give you this sheet of paper, I've got four groupings in here, and there are four jobs listed in each grouping. And you are to assume that you're qualified to do each job equally well, that working conditions, salaries, fringe benefits, everything is the same for each one of the four jobs. So all things being equal, which is the one thing you would really want to do out of this grouping of four, and you must make a choice. So if you don't have a pencil, just remember what your answer is, and after we've completed the answers, I'll give you the key on how we score this thing. And also let me say, there's no right or wrong in this. This is strictly an interest questionnaire. I've got 15, I don't think we have that many in the class, so why don't you hear two of them for you right here. And, you know, they take what I'm passing around. And, oh, there's some pencils over there? Wonderful. One, yeah. Okay, sure. Once we get it all down, it'll be fun to see what we do with it, but I... Oh, I've got some more here. Is that...
Can you tell me what to do?
I can, but I may not.
Okay. I thought you were on a perpetual honeymoon. I mean, it didn't sound like it. I'm sorry. Anybody have any questions, or is it plain as... Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, who is not finished? We all finished? Okay, here's the key. In group one, if you have answered A, give yourself 4 points. If you have answered B, give yourself 2 points. If you've answered C, 1 point, and D, 3 points. In group two, A, 3 points, B, 4 points, C, 1 point, D, 2 points. In group three, A, 1, B, 4, C, 2, D, 3. In group four, A, 3, B, 1, C, 4, D, 2. Now add them up, see what you come up with. If you have 4, 5, or 6 points, you're a blue, so remember that you're blue, okay? If you're 7, 8, or 9, you're yellow. If you're 10, you're a rainbow. Anybody have 10 in this group? Got 2 rainbows, that's unusual, okay? 11, 12, and 13 are red, and 14, 15, 16 are green. Okay, now let's just see. How many blues do we have? 1 blue, okay? How many yellows?
I'm blue.
You're blue also? Okay. How many yellows? Quite a few yellows. May the Lord have mercy on us. You'll see why I say that in a minute. We had two tens, is that right? You're the rainbow, okay? The tens are the rainbows. How many reds? 2 reds, okay. Any greens? Oh, I'm so glad you're a nice person. I hope you realize that. And you're a yellow?
Yeah, bad match, huh?
That's an interesting relationship. Now, what does this all mean? I'll give you these in just a minute. 2600 or 2700 years ago, Socrates came to the conclusion that there are 4 basic personality types, and this is just from sheer pragmatism, sheer observation. He said some people are phlegmatic, some people are choleric, some people are systemic, and some people are sanguine. Later on, about 1945-46, a psychologist with some very sophisticated tools of psychometrics validated what Socrates observed 2600 years ago. People have an intuitive, or what we might call a preferred way of getting results. Now, we all get results, we just get them differently. And it is this difference in how we go about achieving our ends that sometimes creates tensions between individuals. Now, let me show you what I mean. If a person, or those of you who scored in the red quadrant, let me say this, I have it printed on top of the sheet. This, what you have, is not a validated instrument, right? This is just for purposes of demonstration. So I am not saying if I were to give you the battery of our tests that questionnaires, the validated questionnaires, the ones that have 150 some odd questions in them, that you would come out a red. But I just need to play a little game with you, and I can't give you obviously the whole questionnaire. We couldn't grade it, score it to begin with. But if you're a red, or red people score in the upper left-hand quadrant as we project this thing. And what we're saying that these are people, for whatever reason, I think it's intuitive. I think you're born with it. It's almost genetic. Like to get results in a practical, bottom-oriented, no-nonsense manner. They're involved in seeing the end result. This is what turns them on. They're the kind of people who, if there are 23 widgets to be produced during the week, they don't care how the widgets are produced, they're just satisfied when 23 widgets are turned out at the end of the day. They're very hard-driving people in their way of getting results. Now, those of you who are blue, in a sense, are behaviorally quite opposite to those who are red. The blue people, and I think there are two, you and my wife, are people who get results with ideas and conceptualizations and projections and trying to weigh this versus that, trying to find the best methodology of doing it. They like to plan. They are not the hard-hitting type. They're more concerned about the values and the meanings and the purposes. They sort of need to run up the flag every morning and make sure that it's flying right and salute it. There's an idealism in blue people. There's a kind of a commitment to something that is above and beyond just merely getting the production going. Okay, I'm not saying that reds don't have a sense of value and meaning, but the blues are just more oriented towards the conceptual. The greens, and obviously that's where I score, and that's the reason I said you're a nice person if you're a green. Don't we have a tendency to see others in terms of our own self-image, and those who are like us we like, and those who are different we sometimes have a little problem with? The green people are the people-oriented people. They like to motivate, and they like to persuade, and they like to get results with interpersonal relationships. They like to sell, one might say, in the highest meaning of that kind of word. And I'll go into this in much greater detail so you'll understand it. The yellow people, the lower left-hand quadrant, which I'm surprised we had so many in this group, are systemic people. They are people who like to get results in a definitive way, in a definite procedural way. They begin with 1, 2, 3, 4, and they want to follow through on that. They're people who are highly organized, highly systematized. And does that make any sense to you, what I've said so far? Or am I way out in left field with what I'm saying? Okay. Let me give you a funny I'll give you the sheet so you'll have to in reference. A funny illustration on how this really works. The problem is there are 9 cats in the room, and we are supposed to get rid of these 9 cats. That's the task before us. And these 4 different people will do this in a different manner. The red person will get the biggest dog he can find and say, sick him. He really doesn't care. Just get rid of him, okay? The blue person says, wow, that's an interesting project. And she goes to the library and she gets all the research on how you get rid of cats. And she will sit down and think and postulate and talk about it and make sure that we're going to, you know, do it the right way. And when she finally gets back to the room, there are 23,000 cats in the room. But that really does not mean facetious. They're just much more oriented towards being sure that what they're doing is right. What does the green guy do? The guy that communicates, that persuades, that sells. What's his way of getting rid of cats? Absolutely right. He gets a saucer of cream and he says, here, kitty, kitty, kitty. And he's got them all around the saucer of cream. Hey, it's beautiful outside. The sun's shining. The mice are fat running around in the meadows. Don't you want to go outside? That's what the green does. The yellow, very simple. He cuts 2 holes in the door. He writes even over 1, odd over the other one. Then he says, count off. And he wants pussycat 1, 3, 5, 7, 9 out through the odd door. And heaven help the even number pussycat goes out through the odd number door. You see, we are this way. I believe genetically, you know. I really believe that. It may not be, but that's what I believe. Let me tell you, the very first time I ever held an industrial seminar, I'd done these kind of seminars, and of course, personality includes far more than just the preferred way of getting results. But I'd done them in my local congregations, just for individual development and marital counseling and all that sort of thing. And then about the time I told my bishop for the third time to go to hell, I knew I was going to leave the ministry at that time. I'm a Methodist, not a Lutheran, so it's an entirely different connotation, Methodist church than doesn't Lutheran church. I had some business people who had members, who had employees in their congregation, had gone through this process to call me and say, you know, we're interested in what you're doing. John sounds really interesting. Why don't you do it for us? And the very first seminar I had was with a sales firm. Extremely successful. This was back in the days of building a lot of apartment houses, and these people were selling refrigerators and ranges and that kind of stuff, and they were making money hand over fist. And the president said, John, I've got problems in my company. I don't know how to solve them. It's just really terrible. We're making a lot of money, but there's something wrong in the company, and maybe you can help us. I said, well, I'm not, you know, I've been away from life for a number of years when I was in a pastor, but I said, I'll tackle it. So when I got the results in, there were 17 people in the group. Now, most of them were salespeople. The president was a salesperson. He started off in sales. And where do you think salespeople would sort of intuitively fall? What quadrant would salespeople fall in?
Green,
yeah. Every one of my salesperson had, and we use an asterisk in our graph that we use, had his asterisk in the upper right-hand quadrant. The vice president, who was in charge of bank relationships primarily, getting loans and that sort of thing, and also making sure the suppliers were sending him stuff and making sure that things were in the pipeline, was a red. And the control and his assistant were what? Where would a controller fall?
Yellow.
Accounting, methodological kind of thing. Now let me caution you about this. There's some tremendously successful salesmen who happen to be yellow. There's some blue salespeople. But most salespeople are green. I have known one of the most successful production managers at a relatively large corporation who was an intense blue. But most production people are red. I mean, we just do the kind of work that goes along with our intuitive capabilities, don't we? So here are these 15 greens, one red, and two yellows, or 14 greens, whatever it was. And I had told them not much more than I had told you, that here are these four quadrants, that's how people get results. And I told them a story about the nine cats in the room. We sat around this huge conference table. When one of the salesmen popped up, and there was not, I mean, y'all grown up, so I can use the language that they use, a pretty rough language. And one of the salesmen popped up and in dead seriousness said, "Hell, everybody knows John is a son of a bitch. John was a controller." And so for about 30 seconds, they unloaded on poor John. And I mean, they really raked him over the coals. And I said, "Gee, that's the end of my business involvement. You know, what do I do now?" And I said, "Okay, I get the message." And I said, "John, what have you got to say?" And as long as I live, I shall never forget what happened next. He was immaculately dressed, the only person who kept on his coat and his tie and just a neat kind of looking person. He got up very slowly. He looked around the room and he said, "You are just a bunch of bastards." And I said, "Well, that's the end. I mean, where do I go from here?" I mean, and the atmosphere was thick enough to be cut with a knife. These people really disliked each other. It wasn't just, you know, that they were talking. This was intense dislike. And I took a real deep breath and I turned and I said, "Now you salespeople," I said, "you know, I hardly ever say that anything is 100% in life because I don't think it is. But I think in this case I can say that you're 100% wrong. I said, John is not the end result of a human and a dog kind of a copulation. I said, that is not what John is. And when you called him what you called him, that's what you're implying. And I can tell whatever John is, he is not an SOB. And I turned to John, and I thought it was being pretty cute, you know, trying to diffuse the atmosphere. But, I mean, it was serious stuff. And I turned to the salesman, and I turned to John, and I said, "John, you know, let me give you the benefit of the doubt, and let me say that four or five of the parents of these salespeople were not married. I mean, so maybe you're right in some of them, but not all 15 of them are the result of an illegitimate union." And I mean, there was no laughter. There was nothing funny about it. And I said, "I'll tell you guys what I think happened." And it was just one of these intuitive things that just every once in a while, you know, the good Lord's just good to you. That's all you can say. I said, "I think what's happened is you guys are wheeling and dealing into territory. And there's one thing a commissioned salesman knows at the end of the day, and that's what?
How much he made
down to the last penny. When he gets back into the office after 3 or 4 weeks out on the road, he knows what his check is going to be like." And I said, "You come back into the office and a bunch of your orders are in the whole basket. They have not been processed. And you're not going to get your commission." And I happened to hit it right. That's exactly what happened. And I said, "Why are the orders in the hold basket?" And John said, "Well, because they're not completed properly." And I said, "What do you mean by that?" He said, "Well, old Joe," and he pointed his finger. He said, "He sent me an order in. It said 4 dozen refrigerators. Such and such a project. How do I know what to send? I mean, they're 13-foot, 18-foot refrigerators, left-hand door, right-hand door, white, avocado, purple with the yellow polka dots. They're jillion refrigerators that you can send." And Joe said, well, that company has ordered 13.2 cubic feet for the left-hand refrigerator, and if I want to be something different, I told you about it. Why didn't you process the order? And Joe said, you didn't tell me. You see the difference in perspective that people have? The salesman assumes, and the yellow person says, you better spell it out for me. And then I said something, and I don't know, you know, it just popped in my mind. I said, I bet you got a, when you sign up a new customer, I bet you have a credit report that you need to give. And I bet some of you, and they just simply say, credit's okay. That's all you say. And of course, John sees that, and he just goes straight through the roof. And that's what happens in business and industry, doesn't it, a lot? We had one fellow here that just last week I talked with, and you know, and in this company, the conflict between those who sell and those who have to keep track of everything. Once we can help people see, you see what happens to us when people do things differently from the way we do them. What do we start thinking subconsciously, if not consciously? What do you start thinking?
Probably I'm a little better than.
You're a little better than they are, yeah. They're dumb, no good. We build up negative feelings, you see. And if this goes on for a little while, it can really create some tension inside of an organization, particularly when the people, as they did in this little organization, because they were so successful, everybody had the privilege of really expressing themselves. They're not going to get fired. They were making a lot of money for the corporation and a lot of money for themselves. So, I mean, they really unloaded on each other. Well, I mean, is John going to be kind? Is a salesman going to be kind towards John? No, of course not. Major problem in American industry, and I'll come back to our own individual in just a minute. Major problem in American industry is that we don't have enough blues in our corporations. Corporate executives primarily fall into this range in here. Mostly red, some greens. Go, 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 go. They don't know where in the heck they're going, but they're going. And you try to make them sit down for a long-range planning session, and all they're concerned about is what?
Profit,
bottom line. And you talk to them about some of the snags they need to think about 6 months. Oh, 6 months down the road. Don't talk to me about a year down the road. So the blues don't have a chance of getting into the corporate structure because they're cut out before they even take the first breath. They're too idealistic. They're too far removed from reality. I've heard it all in my consulting with corporations. And yet I was lucky enough to get some of them to change their attitude. Here is a red production manager, and he wants to turn these widgets out, and the blue says, we got a problem with some of our employees. What's the red's answer?
Get rid of them.
Huh?
Get rid of them.
Get rid of them, five! Except they don't say it that nicely. They use a little bit stronger words than that. Get rid of them, fire them, get some others. No perception. Now let me ask you this. What about those of us in individual relationships, in marriage relationships, or close relationships with children? What happens there? Anything different that happens in the corporate world? It's the same thing. I'm an intense green, way up here, scored off the score. And let me ask you this, just no more than I've said. In which positions do you expect to find the most difficulties unless people really are quite mature and know how to manage this? Which quadrants would be most likely to be opposed to each other?
The diagonal,
absolutely. The green and the red, and the yellow and the red and the blue. I mean, it's the diagonal that creates the opposition. So. Now I'm an intense green, and my first wife, who passed away a number of years ago, was a very intense yellow. Well, let's go on a vacation. Fine. Where are we going? Colorado. Have you made hotel reservations? Good gosh, there are 23,860 motel rooms in Colorado. Who needs to make reservations? How much money are we taking? Enough. How far are we going to do the first day? Till we get tired. Quit bugging me. Get off my back. I would think to myself. And what would she think to herself?
I'll stay home.
Yeah, just about, you know, just that's right, absolutely, you see. We do these things to each other. We love each other. But we do these things not knowing the needs of the other person. And we can do all kinds of real hostilities can develop between people. You take a hard-driving red and a blue, and it just, they see life through different eyes, don't they? And when we see life through different eyes, because the only point of perspective we have is what? What's our point of view? What's the only point of view you have? Is your own. That's all you got, okay? And you are normal, aren't you? You know, a little bit nuts. Always a little bit nuts here once in a while, but I mean, we're basically normal people. So if I'm okay and I'm normal, and you do things radically different from the way I do them, then what judgment do I begin to form about you? You're not okay. You're a little nuts. Now, I love you, but you're still a little nuts. I mean, that's just the way it is. And after a while, this can build up some real tensions. Children, I mean, I have seen some tremendous problems in families. There were other things involved. No one thing is the only answer to anything. It's all very complicated. It's, as I said a little bit earlier, it's an undivided whole of an intertwined, interlaced order. And no one thing is the reason for anything. But one begins to isolate reasons. And I've seen fathers who, I think of one case, a very successful businessman. And his son wanted to be a violinist. And his father just couldn't see that crazy thing, you know, strumming a fiddle. I mean, it just, and the son disappeared. To this day, we don't know where he is. I mean, that's been years ago. I don't know. Maybe they've gotten back together now, but I mean, for a number of years, we didn't know where the boy was. And one of the reasons was this is, I never got the boy's questionnaire, but the father, I did his business thing, and he became concerned about his family because he still had two or three children at home. And the more I talked, the more I felt that this boy was an intense blue. And a lot of musicians and artists are teachers of blue people. They're idea people. They're conceptual people. They see life through different eyes. And if I'm a successful businessman, then I'm right. I'm right. Look at me. I've made it. You want to play the violin? Son, it's not for you. You got to take a BBA and do something a man does. Kind of stuff. So we find that merely this one thing here can create tremendous tensions and will create horns in people. You know, when they're opposite quadrants or in opposite, they don't stand each other. I mean, you can get horns between reds and blue and yellows at times. It's just a different way of looking at life. And I want to share with you a clever cartoon, and you may keep this. I think I Xeroxed enough for most of you. Why don't you start passing this around and get a chuckle out of this one. And then here's some more. I didn't think that's all of them. Okay. Now, I haven't said a word. I've got to say a word about the rainbows. The people who score in this central area, this is where the 10 score. People who score in the center of this quadrant have greater flexibility than the rest of us to move from one area to another. They have much more flexibility. They can relate to the blues, the greens, the reds, and the yellows. To everything in behavior, there's a positive and a negative. The negative is that the people who score in the center have a more difficult time in functioning in areas that would lie in the extremes of these quadrants. So an insurance salesman or an intense production manager or a tax accountant or a research scientist, this would not be in their best area of getting results because the demands are too intense, and it takes persons with a little bit more intuitive capability to function in these intense areas. So that's there. You know, that's the thing they have to watch out for. All right. Any questions? Does this make any sense what I've said to you so far?
Is there a gender factor?
No gender factor at all. No, these things that the distribution is random. I mean, it says no variation. We don't, if anything, nothing significant, the gender factor.
That is a group of women with the score on about the same group.
It's about the same as men, yeah. It just that many yellows, and you just think of some of our, you know, this business, and I please don't misunderstand me. I'm all for women in government, all this sort of thing, but this idea that our government is going to get better if we elect a bunch of women to it. Hey, we got some tough ladies, I mean, you know. We got some tough ladies out there. We got one in Texas, I mean. I've never seen, of course, I don't have a question. If I had, I couldn't tell you what it was. But if she's not a triple red, I don't know what she is. She just soon, I think, you know, she's her own mother. If she can get something out of it. And just, I mean, gender alone ain't going to make the government better.
It's age or maturity?
There's nothing to do with it. Now, the only thing, I'm glad you mentioned maturity. The only thing maturity does for us is what?
Temperance.
Makes us more tolerant.
Makes us more accepting of other people. Now, I'm glad you mentioned that because I almost didn't say that. A maturing person, and I did not say a mature person. Why don't I say a mature person?
Because we're constantly changing.
Yeah. There ain't no such animal. When Maslow did his study in self-realization, I think he said something that in the history of the world, there may have been 15 or 18 self-realizing people. You know, most of us are in the process of self-realization. We're process towards maturity. And I don't think this stops. You know, when you die, you're still in the process of maturing, as far as I'm concerned. And so I say a maturing person. A maturing person has to live life in which quadrant?
All four.
Absolutely. All four of them. You've got to be open to everything in all four quadrants. Example, remember back in the old days when income tax day was March the 15th, so that's been good many years ago. But, you know, to me, to keep records, I was too busy for that kind of nonsense. So March 14th would roll around, and I say, sweetheart, where are all the records filing? Because I didn't have much income at that time anyway, but still you had to fill out this tax, and if you took certain deductions, you could pay a little bit less, and you know, we were preachers, and so every penny counted. And where are the records? What records? Now, have you been keeping up with this stuff? Well, no, you didn't ask me. You know, and the 14th of March was the worst day of the year. I mean, I just was frantic trying to figure out how I can get another deduction on the income tax form. And then, of course, you know, go through all the check stubs. And it's just agony. Well, once I, you know, grew up a little bit and learned about these things, I realized that you can't operate in this world without yellow. And you know, and you better pay attention to this stuff. You better pay attention to the fact that you have to systematize and organize and keep records and write things down and begin. Life is so much easier when you do. When I, you know, when it came to the business world and had a staff, my personal secretary always was what?
Yellow.
Always a yellow. Wouldn't live without a yellow secretary. Because she kept me honest. It was easy for her to keep up with all the stuff that I'd want to keep up with. And I had only two. I kept my secretaries. And it was a wonderful relationship. Just a wonderful relationship. Because they complemented what I needed. So I think we need to realize that none of us are everything. And we need to find ways of complementing what I would do in the business world if not having any blues and if I, you know, worked with companies that were receptive to that there was something more in life than just profits. And we would go on retreats and we would, you know, make projections and would make plans and we would take care of the blue functions. We didn't have any blues necessarily on the executive committee or on the among the managers and among the people who ran the corporation, but at least, you know, we'd sit there and we'd think through the blue concepts that pertain to that particular organization. I've dealt with promoters are usually what? Almost, I've never found a promoter anything else but. What are promoters?
They're green.
Intense green. And where do promoters fail? They don't pay attention to their finances. And that's usually their main problem. They think that money is just going to come in. And so I did happen to get two promoters that I got rather close to. And they listened to what we had to say to them. And so I said, your best friend is that sorry banker that you hate. That's your best friend. Your best friend is your accountant whom you can't stand. Accept the fact you can't stand him. But that doesn't mean that he hasn't got some information to give you that you need to know so you don't go off half-cocked and lose your company. One of the brightest guys I ever knew was a guy who discovered a color separation process that, I don't know what happened to that process, best process I've ever seen. Probably, you know, the way things were, he could have gotten a contract with Sears, and I would almost get down on my knees and beg him to pay attention to the systems, the procedures, the orders. He didn't. And then he went broke. And I don't know what happened to the process. He was too selfish, I guess, to sell it to anybody else. And it's, you know, color separation is a big, big issue in printing today and has always been. And he had it down pat. But anyway, we are what we are, but we can manage ourselves. We don't change, but we can learn to manage. So we can learn to manage that. If I'm a little bit sloppy, well, you know, I need to do this. Blues need to get tough. How many mothers have I seen who are blues who refuse to be tough when they needed to be tough? Oh, my little darling. Oh. Hoping and praying and wishing and hoping, you know. And sometimes you just have to put your foot down, don't you? That ain't child abuse in my book. It just isn't. I mean, sometimes you just have to say, so far and no further. That's it. Now, you hate to do it. I mean, it's hard to do it. It's, you know, if you're a blue, it's excruciatingly hard to. Boom, I'm not going to put up with that nonsense anymore. This is enough. But it has to be done. We have to, at times, become firm. You know, sometimes you have to be firm with your spouse. Don't you? To just keep the air clear. I mean, I'm all for love, and next week I'm going to start a series of sessions on values, and the first one we'll discuss is love, and we've got some really neat things to say about love, that new perspectives on what this thing is, drawing on Frankl and Halleck, Sullivan, Henry Stack Sullivan, things that you might not be familiar with. They're really neat things about love, but there are times you just have to say, look, I've got this burden, and by golly, I can't take it any longer. And say it quite openly. Am I wrong? Or is that, do you have to sometimes do that? And there are times that the tough father has to listen to the blue child that wants to play the violin. It just has to be that way. So as maturing person, we have to operate in all four quadrants. You can't just be where you'd like to be. Okay? Any questions?
Can reds get along with reds and yellows?
Can what?
Reds get along with reds and blues?
Well, yeah, they usually do because they have the same perspective on life. It's an intuitive kind of a thing. I mean, you know, reds like to just get bottom line results and be firm and be positive and be certain about things, and yeah, and blues, just, you know, it's just wonderful to be married to a blue and a blue, you know, just wonderful, you know, it's wonderful, and green and the green, they just talk each other to death, but they're both having a good time doing it, and certainly yellows, you know, now, there, as I said, there are a lot of other things and that go into this thing. Well, how late do we go? I don't even know. 45, isn't it? Yeah, we started at 3:45. Yeah, have a 15-minute answer. Being a green, I don't even know what time it is. I just let alone the day of the week, and my little calendar got all mixed up. I programmed it wrong, so I don't even know what day of the week it is today. But we can get along intuitively much better when we're closely aligned. Usually, blues and greens get along, and obviously, you know, where you're located makes a difference. A green here and a blue here, you know, that doesn't make much difference. They're very close, and you know, when you're somewhat closely identified, it's easy to get along. Yeah. It's easy to get along when you're alike. Yeah. It's easy to get along, I think it is. Because there's so many other things in behavior. Let me use the last 15 minutes to do something that...
One question.
Sure.
Do Socrates' four types fit and how?
Yeah, okay. The way they fit is the red, he called the choleric. You know, choleric means that you're hot-tempered. And let me give you these while you're talking about it. I've got it all here. It's all on the sheet right here. I'm glad you mentioned that. The choleric is the hot-tempered kind person. And, you know, he's a little bit, what shall I say, too definitive. But still, there's a certain amount of truth in what he says. The sanguine is the warm person, and that's, we equate that with the green quadrant. Obviously, the choleric is in the red quadrant, and the sanguine is the green quadrant, the warm person, the open, warm-blooded person. The systemic, of course, is the yellow, the systems person. And phlegmatic, again, if we use the word phlegmatic in its broadest sense, it's the laid-back person, that's the blue person. So Socrates' four personality traits, yes, are validated by... How would we have found out? Good question, yeah. Okay? Did that answer it?
Certainly does.
Okay. All right. Now, let me, just while we've got a little time, take you to another area of behavior that is related to, but yet entirely different from, ways of getting results, and this is personality traits. Now, people make a... do not, as a rule, distinguish between personality and behavior. I mean, it's just kind of all mixed up in our minds, and yet there is a tremendous difference between personality and behavior. And let me just give you an example of how this thing works out in real life. For instance, there is a behavioral trait that we analyze. Well, let me start off with a different thing. The difference between personality and behavior can be thought of in this wise. Say this is vitamin C. Now, vitamin C in and of itself is neither good nor bad. It's just something that's out there, okay? So, this is a given in nature. When you and I eat vitamin C, when we ingest it, there's certain definite positive results that happen. We're able to fight infections. You can't read my handwriting. You're able to not have any, there are no respiratory diseases, it helps to ward that off, no stomach diseases, you have a pink glow and you're healthy, and vitamin C has a tendency to help to give you good health, okay? Now what happens when you don't eat vitamin C? Very, very predictable. If you stop eating vitamin C, all kinds of negatives happen here. You start getting respiratory illnesses, then you start getting bleeding gums. Then you start getting stomach problems, and finally what happens? Or intestinal problems, and finally what happens? You die. You die because of what disease? Scurvy. Scurvy, okay. Now what's the cure for scurvy?
Orange juice.
Yeah. You see, the reason the British are sometimes called limeys, have you ever heard that? Called the British limeys? Because on some South Pacific journey, some lieutenant who had a bunch of people with scurvy on his boat noticed that when they landed on some island, they started eating limes. And then all of a sudden, their scurvy disappeared. So he had the bright idea of picking a bunch of limes off the trees, and every day they had to get a lime and suck on it. And there were no deaths on his ship. So British Navy issued an order. Everybody's got to have limes. And a boat to sailing ships, and so the British had the limes because of that. Now, that makes sense, doesn't it? Okay, the same thing is true of human behavior. You and I have certain behavioral needs, which are neither good nor bad. Again, I think these are genetic. Some people, for instance, have a need in getting along with others for what we call individual approval. Matter of fact, the majority of people in America have a need for individual approval. A little bit different in Mexico. There's a cultural slant. Not a great deal of difference, but there's some cultural slant. We've done extensive work in Mexico. There are some other people whose psychological vitamins is for straightforward, direct relationships. Some people get along well with others when they get approval. When somebody pats them on their little head and said, "You're wonderful, you're doing a good job, I love you, you're great." That just makes them feel so good. And their behavior then, on the top part of the scale will become productive behavior. There are people who can relate to others, who search for deeper meaning behind things, who are able to sense what's spoken between the lines or what's implied between the spoken lines. And so they have the great ability to empathize their way through life. On the other hand, if I have a need for individual approval, and I don't think you love me, I mean, just bottom line, that's what it boils down to, and you look at me the wrong way, and I say, oh my gosh, she doesn't like me. What happens to my behavior? Any idea? Yeah, what describe it. What happens when you feel you're not being loved or liked or approved or whatever word you want to use?
No motivation.
You lose your motivation. Okay, how do you feel about yourself?
Self-esteem.
Self-defeating, you feel sorry for yourself, don't you? Woe is me, nobody loves me, oh my gosh. Right, you crawl into this little shell.
Then you make it come true.
You make it kind of self-fulfilling prophecy. Yes, sir, that's what it is. Now, I'm convinced that, you know, what we're really doing on the bottom part of our behavior is we're trying to meet our basic need in every instance. What we're saying, don't you see how I'm hurting and how miserable I am and how lost I am? Won't you love me a little bit? But the world's not smart enough to pick up on that. And we say, you're sorry, Arthur, pick yourself up. You're all right, go on, be tough. Anybody can do this thing. Oh my gosh, you don't understand me. The only antidote for the negative side of approval is to actually get approval. Okay, I mean that's the other side of it. Now, a straightforward person, you see, when you tell a straightforward person, John, this is what we need to do. You screwed up on that project, but this is what we need to do over here. Boy, I mean, he's gone. He's objective, he's factual, he's realistic. He needs to know how the cow eats the cabbage. And when you tell a straightforward person how the cow eats the cabbage, he's happy. Doesn't get his feelings hurt. Now, on the downside, a straightforward person, what do you think happens to him when you're not straightforward with him?
Gets suspicious.
He what?
He gets suspicious.
Suspicious, okay, but how does he act out this? I mean,
antagonistic.
Angry.
Angry and antagonistic. Exactly, absolutely. And what he is saying to us in his antagonism and his anger, my gosh, won't you tell me what you want me to do? So you have a marriage, and here again, not between sexes. We've got people, I mean, men who are straightforward, we've got women who are straightforward, vice versa. So here's a straightforward woman, for instance, married to a guy who's got individual approval. He comes home and looks like something the cat drug in on a rainy day. Well, honey, what's the matter? What happened to you at the office today? Oh, nothing, it's all right. Oh, for gosh sakes, what in the world? Well, no, it's all right, oh, gosh. Well, please, sweetheart, tell me. Well, if you don't know. The end of the evening, right? They both go off in different directions because she says, you know, what is the matter with that stupid so-and-so? He won't ever tell me anything. And he says, what's the matter with her? She doesn't love me. And out of that kind of misunderstanding, you know, you get divorces. I have handled cases where, now usually it's not that simple, because by the time they seek a counselor, you know, it's a lot of water has run over the dam. But I've seen cases where simply helping people understand that you are this and she is that and she is this and you are that, they started laughing. I had, in the area of conflict, that's an interesting area. We analyze behavior and basic needs in six different areas. And surprisingly enough, and there's no, you know, life is, it doesn't hand you a nice, neatly wrapped Christmas package. there's some, you know, variations in these things. My need in conflict is that I become an extremely thought-oriented person. I don't like conflict. I just don't like it. And I want to get off up into my room, and I want to think about it and cogitate on it and solve it, you know, in a real low-key kind of a gentlemanly fashion. And my first wife had a need for extended discussion and debate. Now, can you imagine what happened between us?
She died.
You're being very cruel, but I'll forgive you. She did, I mean, but that was not the reason. We resolved that problem. It's really funny, you know. There'd be a conflict, as there invariably has to be, and not has to be, but there is, particularly among younger people when they're married, and She would just, you know, say, well, talk to me. And you know, when my subconscious mind said, this is a conflict problem. This is not a matter of getting along. This is a conflict. I would sit in my chair. And I would just sit there. And she says, talk to me. Get off my back. Get off my back. And see, then when we saw these pages, we started laughing. We understood the problem. And then once you understand it, what do? You manage it. So the good Lord made a mistake when he gave some people the need to talk things through. I mean, you know, I can't tell the good Lord made a mistake. That's his problem. That's not mine. So then, you know, I said to myself, and we worked out a system that if there was a problem that really needed to be discussed, and which I just wanted to think about it. I was a thought-oriented person. And if I had had a real bad day at the office and I was really, you know, things just didn't fall in place, I would just go like this. And this meant, sweetheart, I've had it up to here. I love you. You're wonderful. Give me a little time. Just don't insist on it right now. Then became my responsibility. And it's amazing how little time it takes to then say, okay, sweetheart, I'm ready. Let's have it. And then talk to her. That I have it.
How does that blend in with your four squares? Because you think if you were a green that you would...
Yes, That's when nature does a real dirty trick on you, on us. There's no correlation between individual needs and ways of getting results. As a matter of fact, I'll just go into this very quickly. And this is a two-day seminar that I'm giving you here. But we have a few minutes. What happens is we have the four quadrants, and then we superimpose a horizontal and vertical line, and we take all six of the areas of behavior that we analyze, the areas of personality, I should say, and then ensuing behavior that we analyze are getting along with others, giving and accepting direction, organizing and planning, handling conflict, physical and emotional stamina and decision making. And we combine all these six we discuss them individually in when we have seminars. Then we combine them and we assign a value on the vertical line, which is the communication line. And I've had, you know, more cases than one where a person would have a red asterisk way up here. And we use a little dot on this communication line, and he would be down here. This is open and direct. This is indirect and suggestive, with varying degrees in between these two. So he would be a person who would have this tremendous need to get results, but behaviorally, he doesn't project himself forcefully. And what we've been able to do with people is to help them understand, you know, where they're on the scale, and so they manage, not change. You don't change your basic personality structure. You don't want to do that. But you can manage your behavior when you see you're not getting across, just like the mother at times has to do this far and no further. We say you got to tell employees a little bit more forwardly, straightforwardly, because, you know, 85% of the population is more communicative than you are. So you got to use your intelligence to manage your behavior. But until people see this black and white and we show them the graph, they don't know that. It causes a lot of internal tension.
Do you work with any high school or college counselors? Because I think so often we just address the personality type of the person or their capabilities intellectually, and they almost put no emphasis on the individual needs of that person.
Right. Now, we try to get in the years and years ago into the system, in the state system of education in Texas, and it's a lost cause. I mean, we just couldn't break through the defensive barriers of the educators. And so we gave up on it. I mean, at that time, our company was real young, and we had to survive. So we had to go where the business was. And then when we became successful, we just didn't go that way. I mean, it's regretful. I've always wanted to do that. But
because now we have so many young people graduating with these degrees, they don't even know what they're going to do with.
Right. It's just terrible. Education is some real... Well, just think what happens to a little child in the first grade when a teacher is a yellow... And my granddaughter is a green. Turns her off. I mean, turn off the educational process in the first grade. Don't want to go to school. Make such an impact that very hard to deal with, very, very hard to deal with. Yeah, I mean, it's a kind of knowledge that all of us ought to have, you know, to make life a little bit easier and a little bit smoother. And
same. We evaluate objectivity versus subjectivity.
How do you perceive problems? And again, when we combine all six personality traits, you know, one personality trait may make a person extremely subjective, but when we put it all together, they might wind up on this end of the scale. These are people who say, 2 and 2 is 4, that's how the cow eats the cabbage, and this is right, this is wrong, and over here, you know, we have St. Paul, and over here we have God Almighty. I mean, they just hand you the law, you know, and they tell you how it is. And obviously someone who lives over here has much more intuition in how he or she approaches a situation. And we get all kinds of real, real interesting correlations. But what one has to do, obviously, is to correlate the asterisks with the little dots. And then that the little dots are the top part of our pages. And then we've got things like this. We use a big dot for pressure behavior. When your basic needs are not met, where do you fall on these scales? And, you know, some people are, I've seen triangles that are this big. Where you go from an asterisk here to a little dot here to a big dot here, vice versa. People with a big triangle have lots of internal stress. Don't know why, but they're caught. Their personality, their behavioral traits are so big that they have lots of stresses. Now, the advantage to a big triangle is what? More flexibility. And then there are little triangles. This is neat if you're like that. I mean, the world revolves around you. Just got your own. You got your own little world you're living in. But boy, do they have a hard time to get to these other areas. So it's a pretty kind of loosey-goosey deal that we have in behavior. So it's no wonder we've got lots of horns as well as halos from time to time. I've given you an awfully quick survey, and but I hope you've gotten something out of it, and just at least open your mind to something you hadn't thought about before. Okay. Bless you all. We'll see
you.
No, you enjoyed it thoroughly. Thank you so much. No. Thank you. You're kind.